At least they are ready.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Wow. Actually, yesterday they gave me a speaker gift. They gave me these nice monster earphones. I will give them away today. I don't know to who. I don't know why I'm going to give them away. But I'll work it out. So, just so you know, one of you guys is going to be the lucky, I wouldn't say winner, but owner of these monster earphones.
Yeah, we have a couple of other Jurassic shirts here as well. So...
Yeah, they're used, but that's not going to matter, right? You can have my cheese as well if you want to. Well, let's get serious. Welcome to the session. What's it called? I don't remember.
Hacker tools.
Yeah, it's
the hacker you should
tools,
know about and you should worry about.
You should know and worry about. And that's the whole idea of this session. We want to make an interactive demo session where we're just going to fire up tools and talk about them. Because we want you guys to be aware of what's out there. So that's the whole idea. We're not going to use any slides. We don't even have an introduction slide. I don't care what to say at Microsoft after this, but I think I have like 500 reminders in my inbox that says, where are your slides? There are none. They're nowhere. So we're going to jump back and forth, me and Hassan. We're just going to demo different things that we think could be interesting for you guys. It's not going to be like a top list of the most important tools. It's just going to be some tools that are good for demo and good for awareness that you should know about. So there will obviously be some tools we're not covering during this 73-minute long session that we have. So bear with me. Don't sit there and think, well, why is he not showing that? Well, if you have feedback, that would be great. We can bring them in for next time, but the session is too short. We usually run 5-day courses on hacker tools. So it's kind of hard to cover it all. You have to set the expectations right. I feel like giving you the opportunity to kick this going. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
So what number are you?
Four.
Four. And let's. One thing that is very popular today, especially when you're at TechEd, is you want to do wireless, right? Everybody does wireless. That's not fun, or it's fun to do wireless, but that's not funny. And I don't think we're going to do Wall of Sheep or anything, maybe later, depending on where you're browsing. But we want to make you aware of what you can do when you're in the middle on a wireless network that somebody has access to. So, Hassan.
Well, this is a login site to some, or login page to some governmental site or system, as you can see there, as you can tell by the name and the URL and all the other attributes and things on that page.
Yeah, bring in the Arab or the Iraqi guy to do the hacks against the mill sites with the thousands of witnesses. So smart. I think I'm going to sit in the audience for a while.
What I would like to demonstrate for you here, what can happen if there is a man in the middle? What can happen if there is somebody watching and somebody has the opportunity to change and alter the traffic going to from your computer and other systems? So this is just a very simple demo. I won't click the logon button, but I will show you that an attacker can actually grab all the information you have in your browser just by intercepting the traffic going forth and back to your browser. So I don't need to participate in any other clicking buttons or anything like that. I'll just go ahead and start typing my logon information here. Let's see. That's me. And my famous password. So let's go to my man-in-the-middle browser proxy, which I have here, and observe these two lines. The first one says, sorry, Marcus. The data is, it's something sent to an IP address or DNS name called the data.is, and there is an email +++, and there is an Hassan, the thing I just typed in the login name. Okay, and my password, the data is again, and then there is a password +++, and then my abc.123. So if you go back to my browser, I haven't clicked the logon button yet.
So it's not even sent yet. But it's there. Interesting, huh?
How can we do it? How can this tool do this type of thing? Well, I have an extension. This tool is called, to begin with, the Fiddler Web Debugger or Web Proxy. This tool is made by, or was made by, Microsoft research team. The guy has moved and the tool moved with him now. It's a brilliant one if you want to troubleshoot applications, web applications, and so on. You gotta know about this one. What I'm doing here is I'm extending this tool with custom rules. So the extension means I am adding a man-in-the-middle behavior to this one. So everything that flows through this proxy tool, I can change at any time. I can write my own functions and procedures to decide exactly what's going to be changed. So what I'm doing is actually hooking up the HTML code with my own code. So I go inspect the element and go down here, just show you quickly. I say on change, there is an on change event. So if this field changes, if the content of this or value of this changes, please post the information to this address. So that's the field name and the value of that field. It's as simple as that. I'm just hooking a JavaScript to each and every input field in this web page or any web page that goes through this proxy. And this way I can grab that information from the page. I don't need to look at it in any other way. This is a cross-site scripting, a controlled cross-site scripting that I'm performing. And it's for the simple fact that I have access to the packages going forth and back. I'm the man in the middle. Somebody's connected through my wireless network, or I managed to push a Trojan or any kind of other software to that device so I can monitor the traffic going forth and back.
Yeah.
And that's where we stop.
Yeah, that's where we stop. We're not going to log on to that website.
That no.
Could be not too fun tomorrow. So we have a large document, or we have some notes. We're going to post all the notes and the links to the stuff we're demonstrating on a SkyDrive. There are a lot of small notes here. You can take one of these small, almost like a business card, if you want to have that link later, so you don't have to worry about writing anything down. But just for the record, this is a Mitten tool. We think it's not... This particular tool is not so important, but the threat level is fairly high. I mean, you can do some damage with this tool. So we're trying to kind of compare them or put some taste to it. It's scriptable, obviously. Those scripts were made by a scientist that did that attack. This is just one out of many web debuggers, so there's nothing wrong with Fiddler. It's a good web debugger, but it can be used for bad, so you should be aware of that. Mm-hmm. There are many others. WebScarab, Burp Suite, many of those tools. So this is one. Let's do some more basic tools. Let's start from the beginning and work our way up. Nmap, for example. Nmap is maybe not so sexy, but it's a very important tool. If you look at this, it's actually importance threat level would be almost 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is dynamic paper. So, I'm going to go to my attack machine, and I'm going to fire up Nmap. And... a lot of notes here, why not? Just to see what iPad addresses I have. Nmap is kind of complex. You have a lot of syntaxes, and the whole thing about Nmap, it's a network mapper. So you can make a pretty good check on your network to see what's exposed. So a simple Nmap scan would be just run Nmap, 192.168, 194, whatever, 10 to 200. You can do various kinds of scan. You can do host discovery. You can do regular TCP scans. You can do stealth scans. You can do UDP scans. You can do OS discovery, service scans, and all that stuff. And as you can see, it's fairly quick. It took a few seconds to cover several hosts, and I will see exactly what's on them. So from a hacker perspective, it's very hard to map your, or very easy to map your network if you have access. It doesn't matter if it's an external exposure or internal. It's just going to be different from what you see from where you are. But this is a basic starting point. So you should know about this. And it's also pretty valuable. I think most of the times when we do penetration testing and stuff, when we do the mapping, we have more accurate maps over their network or diagrams over the network than they have. Because usually they do these visual documents and they're 2 years old, so nothing really is the way it really is. So you can actually use this for good, just to do some mapping of your network. You will find all the unmanaged systems. The managed are easy to find, but not the others. So we're going to move along and see what we're going to do next. Other things, when you know what's on the network, you can actually start to brute force services. So I'm going to use another tool called Hydra. This is another nice little tool. And Hydra, or Hydra, I don't know how you say it, I'm Swedish, and whenever I pronounce something wrong, I have a good excuse. That was kind of funny. Hydra can do various protocols. If you look at this, this is Hydra with a big patch. So it can actually brute force Cisco, FTP, FTPS, HTTP, HTTPS, proxy things, LDAP, SMTP, MySQL, SQL, Oracle, all that stuff. So there are many, many different protocols that this tool speaks, if you will. Mm. And the simplest way to use it is just to take Hydra and then say, okay, I want to run a brute force using this user list, this password list, towards this system, this or this system, you can have a list of systems as well, over this protocol. So you can just run it like this. And see what you can find. And I found the password of Mr. Bill. His password was actually Gates exclamation mark. It is a complex password though, so I have to credit him for that. But again, you can use this targeting any services. And it's actually damn fast.
No, this is definitely an active attack. So this will show up in failed logons and things like that. It will probably lock the account if you go too much. And
yeah. Yeah, you can see here, SA has a password or password. Also very complex. Very good. Good job. But it does a lot of tries in a very short time. So, and like Hassan said, you're not necessarily vulnerable if you have password lockouts and stuff, but again, you can use these tools as denial of service tools as well. Because if I issue an attack towards every system and locking all the accounts out, you're not going to be able to do your services anymore. So sometimes when we do investigations when companies are under attack and people are trying to brute force their way in, and they're all locked out, they actually have to take away the lockout. So it's kind of interesting scenario. That's for fun. FTP as well. Who knows? Can't go wrong. Pre-cooked demos. Failsafe. So, again, simple.
So this is if you're already on a local area network. What if we encounter some wireless? Shall we look at that?
Sure, why not? Let's jump from one to the other.
So, four, please.
But before we leave Hydra, just remember it. Interesting and valuable tool. And there are links to all the tools if you want them for some reason for your test lab. I know you're never going to use them for bad. You can find the websites now where you can download them. This is free to use. And I would say this is threat level 7. This is kind of bad from a scale from 1 to 10. I mean, it's often very easy to go for old systems and local accounts and get your first foothold.
You're actively seeking access and foothold of the systems. Great. Wireless. Which one did you switch to?
Do you think the tempo is too low? Not yet. Okay.
Let's see. Some of you guys have figured I have a couple of antennas attached to my laptop. These are connected to a wireless interface, which I can use in monitor mode, so I can go sniffing. I use a toolkit or some tools from a toolkit called AirCrack. This is the AirDump NG, so I tell it to use my adapter and go searching on all different channels. Let's test 1, 2, 3, and give me all you can find. So this one is actually enumerating all active access points, all active clients associated with any of these access points.
Did you see that one in the top? Is that why you're laughing?
So be careful what you are calling your network or wireless network. And
I'm
don't
gonna,
be shy if you see things like that. So I got a very good information about what access points there are, what SSIDs there are associated with, and actually what clients there are as well. So you see this, the second portion here of the window is the, all the active clients associated with different SSIDs. So what can I do about this? Now I'm actually recording all the traffic at the same time as I'm looking at it. So what I can do here is conducting active attacks on any of these SSIDs in terms of trying to figure out the network key, the key required to authenticate to that network. It depends on how the network is configured, whether it's 802.1x, enterprise, WPA enterprise, or a PSK-based or web-based authentication. It could be harder or easier to do that. So let's get, just go show you. I've already recorded a couple of authentication to an access point I have here. The SSID is called hacking dot dot dot, so let's do that. Show you the capture file first. I just captured the information with the error dump, and I can pick it up in the Wireshark. That's another tool we use, or hackers use, or those who do penetration testing use. This is the raw information I just recorded using that tool. So let's look at it from a different perspective. I do the aircrack ng and tell it to use a dictionary file, which is a word list, and use it on the hacking.cap. And I find my hacking SSID here. It says there is one handshake. It's a WPA shared secret-based authentication. So I did it when I disconnected my computer and connected to the network a couple of times. So I got that handshake. I'm now trying to crack the handshake. So I tell it it's number 13 in the list, and it goes about testing all of these passwords against that challenge response-based handshake, and it says, hey, key found, abcd.123. Now, that's a more advanced password.
Yeah, that's your semi-strong password,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I wonder what your strong password is. You always have abc.123.
Still have efgh.
I don't know.
And 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, as you can see here, this toolkit can be used in many different ways. You can actively attack networks by trying to guess the passwords. There is actually another tool here called Airbase, which is an active fake access point. So once you fire it up, it will start announcing any SSID that it sees. There is a client probing for that SSID. So it will go live with it as if there is a real access point behind it. And the reason for that, I want to trap those clients into my system. I want them to reveal information about themselves and what system they would like to communicate with, and so on. So that's the aircrack.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of the Wireshark. Just before we leave the Wireshark, I would like to show you something I did yesterday.
We have all the time in the world,
yes.
My friend.
You see, there is a cap I did at the hotel yesterday. Let's see.
Do you realize we didn't even introduce ourselves?
We can do it whilst it's loading.
Yeah, that's so funny. How many of you guys would say, like, you know who we are? Hands up. That's almost half, so we
cool.
Maybe should.
Mm-hmm.
So, who are you?
Hassan El-Shikerti is my name. I work for TrueSec. I've been in the IT security business for, I don't know, 15, 16 years, something about that. Before that, I have a background as a developer. Actually, my first tool I created was an editor that could help me type in Arabic, which is my mother tongue. So I only had a computer, English-speaking one, so I would like to have an editor to help me type in Arabic, so I created one. We're speaking MS-DOS 6.5 and Turbo Pascal at that time.
That means so, you're young, man.
Yes.
I'm 42. You're like 5 years younger or something. It's kind of funny, though. It's a true story about Hassan. The first applications he wrote them before he even had a computer. So his brother bought him a book. So he wrote the code, made the applications, and then eventually one day later on in life, when he got his first computer, he actually used them and they compiled.
I had a good teacher.
Okay. He's got a good brother. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, how's that for positioning? At the office,
programming is fun.
At the office, we call him the wolf. That's because whenever you're in trouble, you bring in the wolf, a.k.a. Pulp Fiction. You know. So, if you have dead bodies, call a sign. He'll take care of them. Mm. Send them to his home city in Islamabad, wherever there is. Just kidding. Myself, me and Hassan go way back. That's why we can make these raw jokes about each other. I mean, we've been working together for 13 years now. Even before we started Trusik, we worked at another company together. I am a little bit different in my profile from Hassan. I run the group, but I used to do penetration testing and stuff, and I don't do that so much anymore. I'm more of a quality assurance kind of guy. But the thing that is great for me and the unique position I have is that I work with all these guys that are such experts. I get to see incidents happening and how we go about them. I get to participate in many different penetration tests each and every day. So I see so much. So that's my wallet. I know a little bit about everything. But I'm hardcore Windows, and I've done a lot of penetration testing, reverse engineering all the stuff too. So just so you know kind of who I am. But I'm getting worse and worse. It takes more and more time to prep demos. I'm getting older. I know what's happening. I'm 42. It's not fun anymore. Are you still doing things?
No, the PCAP file is now loaded in Wireshark. So I'm looking for IMAP-based traffic. You know what IMAP is? Clear text protocol used to communicate between clients and mail servers.
So are you sure you're going to find me, or are you waiting for something that could be nothing?
There is something in there.
Okay. You can laugh about it, but last year one of the most known speakers got his IMAP username and password stuck in this guy. So he took some heat for that from us.
Yeah.
So.
So anyways, we can go back to this and see whenever it's done loading that.
Sure.
So
let's do some more basic tools. These are the essentials, and we're going to work from there and do something more interesting right after. Netcat is one of the oldest, most well-known hacker tools that anybody heard about. And it's actually a post-exploitation tool. Mm-hmm. It will give, if you have some limited access to a system and you want to have a real interactive remote shell, you use Netcat. You can actually use Netcat for more things than that. This is the NCAT. It's a version of Netcat that is a part of the NMAP bundle. It's also for free. It's got way more features than the original Netcat. It can do SSL tunneling and all that stuff. So I think it's worth mentioning just because of that. And I'm going to show you a sample of when you would use such a tool. So on the attacker, if I do NCAT, you can see that, yeah, I'm live. You said you have a lot of different switches here, like I said. You can actually use it for IPv6 traffic. Not that you ever look at the IPv6 connections, but that makes it even better for the hackers. You should be aware of that. The hacking tools are implementing IPv6 nowadays. There are a lot of actively hacking tools for IPv6 as well. You can do TCP and UDP. You can put certificates in there and have real qualified and quality assured connections, trusted connections. So they're going to be hard to inspect and all that stuff. Using NMAP, I can do this in two different ways. I can set up a listening connection, and I can connect to it. I'm listening for somebody to connect, and whenever he connects, he will give me his command prompt. Or I can take my own command prompt and send it to some other listener. In most scenarios today, you want a reverse connection. So you actually want to wait for the targeted victim to phone home to you and send his shell back to you, especially with the firewall infrastructure we have today. So a typical example is when you hack a web server. We're not going to do any complex hacks today.
And can't, maybe?
Maybe. That's why I have you, man.
I think you have it there.
Either way, so we're going to make a scenario here, and and pretend that we just hacked this web server, this IIS up here. So this is now the computer. And the first thing you usually do, so you should be aware of this too, is when you hack a system, you want to get interactive access. This is a web shell. So this is when you do a SQL injection or something. I can do some SQL injection, whatever, later if you want to. But when you do it, the first thing you want to do is you want to upload an interactive web shell. So this is just an ASPX file, but it will provide me with a file browser, an uploader, and a command execution feature. So I can do dir or whatever and execute. So you should be aware of this. This is the thing that will end up on your web server whenever somebody hacks it. And I actually presented this on the pre-con. We did a hack and we used this shell. And it was kind of funny because I did this. I browsed for this shell and we found so many out there. I did in the last session as well, so I'm not going to do it now. But these are very common. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to start Netcat from here. But this is me hacking a web server, having some semi-good shell, but I want the real interactive feeling. So I'm sitting on the attacker, I'm starting MCAT, and I'm listening to port whatever, for example 80. So I'm waiting for somebody to connect to my attack machine on the internet over port 80. Since I have hacked this guy, and I've uploaded nc.exe, which is the older version, the only reason I didn't do NCAT is because it's got dependencies, so I have to upload more files, and I don't have time for that. We have so many cool tools to cover. So instead, I'm going to do nc.exe, and I'm going to connect back to my attacker, which is 192.168.1.4.3.80, and then I'm going to execute cmd.exe. This is what's going to make the shell flip pop back to me. And take this and execute. And if this works, you can see on one side here that it's just executing, but on the other side here, you will see a shell popping up here. Here you go. So if I do an ipconfig here, you see that this is the 14, and if I take myself, the attacker, this is the attacker, I have different configuration. If I do a host name or whatever, this is the A4 host, kind of a boring name, but that's what it is. If you do this host name here, just to see if there are different contexts. This is the DMZ server 4, this is the attacker 4. So it's really important to understand that whenever you can execute code somewhere, people will go for remote shells so you can get the real interactive shell experience. So you should be aware of Netcat. Actually, you can use it for good as well. Sometimes on the office where we want to communicate and stuff or send a file to another, we can use Netcat. Mm-hmm. Not a corporate thing to do, but a hacker is kind of a fun thing to do, if you will. So that was Netcat. Let's move on. We did some Hydra. I think one thing that is worth mentioning that's very important to understand is everybody talks about how you break into systems from the outside world perspective. I mean, we talk about how to compromise web servers. We talk about all the malware that gets into your clients, right? But the most common step after that, at least when we do penetration testing and the most fail-safe way I know, to get from a low-priv system to real important admin credentials is going for SQL servers. Still today. And even though you think you know about all your SQL servers, you don't. If you have developers, they will install SQL servers on their development platforms. And they have IP on there. You have all these financial systems and stuff that you bought off shelf. They have SQL servers with hard-coded passwords on them. Not all of them, but some of them. And they're everywhere. So I don't think I've ever been to a company with like 500-plus computers and I didn't find any SQL servers that you could break into when you have internal access after that first step. Sometimes we even find them on the internet still today. But that's more sad than fun, though. So, was that funny? Anyhow, there are tools you can use to discover SQL servers. Of course, you can do Nmap. But just to give you another example, I'm going to do MS SQL scan, for example. And this is a simple script, just a small JavaScript. But you can target an IP range. So let's do, for example, target. And I'm just going to do 192.168.194. And this is going somewhere. 194, and let me see, what could we try? 100 to 200, maybe. I'm not sure exactly where I have them. 200, yeah, why not? See what we can find. I mean, this one will use UDP, so they all use different kinds of functionality in order to find what they look for. So sometimes you need to use different tools to find different SQL servers, for example. Some tools will just look for the port. If you change the port number, they won't find it. So each and every service will somehow announce their presence. So the right tools for the right job will find them. In this case, I mean, even Wireshark is great. Just listening to traffic on the network, you will see SQL connections. You'll find them eventually. But in this case, I found one. It's an old Windows Server 2000, or Windows 2000 server, that was the name at the time, that is announcing itself over port 1433. So this is just an example of a simple tool. But I'm going to walk you through the process of discovering SQL servers, brute forcing them, and more importantly, getting command shell interactive access to them later. So the next step, this is MS SQL scan. The next will be, I mean, there are many of these tools, but this is just one of our internal tools. Most of our tools that I demonstrate are not on the web. If you want them, you can just ask me for them later. We'll give them to you unless they're very limited for some reason that we cannot explain. But like this tool, if you want it later, just take one of those notes and post on Facebook or whatever. Just ask us for it. We'll give it to you. The TSSQL brute forcer. And this is also good to understand. This will take the output precisely like the MS SQL scan produces it. So often we create tools that will match other tools. I mean, you can use any tools of your choice, but this is just a good example of that. So I'm going to run this, and I have a credential file that will just have a set of credentials, and I will have a server list. And I'm going to run that. And it's pretty fast. It will find that this server, 104, has the user ID of SSA and password of password. That always happens in my demos. They all have lame passwords. I don't know why. But again, if they don't have password lockouts, you'll find it. Sooner or later, you'll find it. Sometimes you have all the time in the world. You can wait for 1 or 2 days or even a week and come back and harvest later. The step after this is more interesting. This is when you break into the system. So now I have the username and password and the IP address. So let's do one of Hassan's old tools, the SQL shell. So SQL shell, this is a cute interactive tool. 2008, that's 5 years ago. We're getting older, man. 192.168.194.104, right? Yep.
Yes.
104, and it's a SQL logon. SSPI means you're doing a single sign-on using your logged-on credentials. User ID SA and password or password and log on. If you do this question mark, you can see the functions that he built in. One is enable XPC in the shell. So if you can't do code execution right away, you can just use that function. And then you will get interactive command execution. Of course, you need the right privs. But when you're internal, they are most often, almost always, running under system context, still today. I wouldn't say that for all of the newer implementations, but anything that has a few years of being around. So my next step will be to, for example, verify that I can execute code, so I can do an ipconfig or hostname, ipconfig. And I can verify, I can run code remotely. And again, this is not on the hacker machine. This is now happening on the SQL server. So So I'm executing code on him. I'm gonna move this a little bit further. So next thing I want to do is I want to upload my tools. And in this case, I'm going to steal password hashes or something. So I'm going to upload using the remote copy function of this tool. And I'm going to tell it to take my password hash dumping tool, gsecdump, and upload it. There are many different tools that can do this, but this is one of our internal tools. We cannot trust it. So, whoops. That would actually have been a really bad mistake that I didn't make. I didn't copy it, I pasted it. That means I would appreciate doing Control-Z. Control-C. Thanks for letting me know, man. You actually helped me. So, as of right now, you're the closest one to the earphones. That can change. That can change, just so you know. So I'm going to remote copy this. Remote underscore copy. Oh, just one C. Misspelled too. So the thing with the SQL Server connections is that this is a connection that does not allow for binary transfer. It will just transfer text streams, if you will. So what we're doing is we're converting the gsecdump.exe into text, and we're sending the text representation of that tool over to the other side, and we're converting it back to binary later. And this technique is good to be aware about, because that's what you do in web also. You cannot just send things through like a user logon page or something. So you have to convert it into text, because that's what they expect. And then you convert it back. So we do that all the time. So this is good awareness. And we use different simple small tools like this in order to accomplish this. So it's all those small tools that you should know about. And this is just an example. You can always find some other tool that does the same or a little bit does it a little bit different. But I want you to be aware of this. So now hopefully we have gsecdump uploaded. So I can run gsecdump. And this tool, running now on the SQL server, not on my system. And the reason I can do this is because who am I? It's because I'm running under system context, because the SA account was installed as a service as local system. Which makes sense, because this SQL server will work fine. If you run it on system, everything will always work. So you can dump hashes from the SAM database, the Active Directory database. You can dump the logged on hashes. You can dump LSA secrets. So let's play with this for a while. I'm going to do gsecdump slash u for logged on hashes. And this is an interesting account, internal backup service. That could be interesting, of course. We can do slash s, and these are the local hashes on that system. So I have them as well. Bill lives a little bit over inside of us. I can dump the secrets. So this is, for example, the backup service internal account. The password is in clear text, back me up. Reason for this is obvious, this is not new, but again, you cannot be reminded too much. Recent tools actually have discovered, or recent research has discovered, that you can also find domain accounts in clear text, even though they're not running a service. Reason for that is for single sign-on experience when it comes to authentication packages and stuff. So if you want to do single sign-on, digest authentication to some place, your machine needs to know your password. So the passwords are actually stored in modern Windows in clear text. Not necessarily a problem as long as nobody hacks into your computer and steals them. Not necessarily a problem if they already have your credentials because they're you, but it's a problem if you reuse them on other places. So that's the problem. So I can use these hashes for a lot of things. Actually, I found there's another tool that is worth mentioning. It's a Windows credential editor. I'm going to run this as well. So I'm going to copy this one up. Just to show, this is... I have some issue with copy-paste. This time I didn't paste, at least. Copy. Paste. This tool is made by one of the guys who really know this stuff. It's the Windows Credential Editor. It can do a lot of things. It can not only extract hashes, it can actually change your token as well, so you can become somebody else. So that's kind of neat. I mean, we have other tools at TrueSec for that. We call them Run Hash and MSVCTL. So we have similar tools. They're out there. And we actually give ours away for free. This is for free too, so that you can assess your systems. Let's see, WCE, Windows Credential Editor. So, as you can see, you can do things right away here. I think it's class question mark. List logons, NTLM credentials, logon sessions indefinitely. There was one that I really liked here. You can set Lua, but you should just be aware of these tools. They also have dump Kerberos tickets. That's kind of neat. Yes. If you ever think you need your own Kerberos tickets and move them to another computer. I wanted to show you one of them, if I can find it. The credential provider. Dump clear text password. Yeah, there it is. W. VCEW. Hopefully they have some running. Yeah, so here you can see the administrator has the 1234 TrueSec 1234 IS4. So it's a very complex password, but I found it because they want to have the single sign-on experience. I didn't change anything. That's just a feature of the system, operating system. So let's see where we can go from here. Did I have anything else in mind? Well, of course I can dump this, and I'm going to continue later, but just to...
Yeah, that was a lot of tools, so...
It's your turn. I know you want to do something
else. Yeah, you mentioned the other tool that could dump things in clear text as well, besides the WSE.
Yeah.
So let me show that.
Yeah, that's the Mimikatz.
The Mimikatz, yes. So I do C script. And the pass. Now, the reason I'm using C script is to give some automation for the Mimikatz, because it's a couple of commands I need to type in. And just to be sure that I don't mistype things, I did JavaScript for that. So this one is showing me now the all kind of information about logged in users. I can see that I'm running in a Windows machine at least, and let's begin here. This is authentication IDs, a couple of them. I'm logged in as administrator account. This is the administrator account on this PC, and that's the password on this PC. Okay. Further down, you can see that there is some other accounts as well. This one, this computer belongs to work group. The password we got is actually in both the encrypted format. This is the LM, NTLM hashes, or NT hashes, and these are the clear text passwords as well. That was what Marcus was mentioning here. So this is the SSP digest provider and the terminal services provider. Who keeps the password in clear text in memory. So once you log in to your machine, those passwords will be in clear text memory until you log off or restart the machine. This is for the reason of single sign-on. So if you go to a website that requires digest-based authentication, then your browser will be able to do that logon without prompting you for the new password. The same is for the terminal services single sign-on provider. If you enable terminal services single sign-on, then it will pass your password along the RDP protocol to the other side. So that's the reason we can find these things in memory in clear text. And now that this is my account. Now this is recorded. This is the local password on this machine. This is not the domain connected machine. So it's time to change password anyway. And I got some other things here about services, other sessions just being established because of services or background jobs being going on in this machine. So this is the Mimikatz. Another nice feature of the Mimikatz is that I can actually extract certificates besides the passwords. So I can dump all local certificates in this machine as well. So this is another script, just dumping the system store local machine certificates. And I will find them in a file here. So this is the certificate itself and the certificate along with its private key. Exported to be reused on any other machine.
In my country, we use them for banking. I don't know about you guys. So, Yeah. It's kind of interesting. They're easy to dump them. It's not new, but this is like all in one tool.
So all soft certificates can be exported this way, regardless the type of flags we have on the private keys, if they are flagged non-exportable or so, it doesn't matter, really.
Yeah. So maybe we can combine the wireless attack with Mimikatz mm-hmm. and stuff, and maybe we can help you if you lose your certificates. You can come to us, and we can give them back to you. Something? You
know? Backup service.
Could be a good service, yeah, for free. Or we take 10%. You're not going to notice. It's going to happen.
I promised you guys with the IMAP, and here it is. This is the dump from the hotel yesterday. I'm just showing you the sign off now. I don't want to show you the logon with the logon names and the password. And I'm just trying to hide the server address as well here. So this has been a Microsoft Exchange IMAP 4 server, and there's been a Courier IMAP server as well. You see, this is an interesting thing. Then the client has actually requested an SSL session. And the server says, hey, go ahead and renegotiate to SSL. So what if I'm in the man in the middle and just blocking that client request to initiate SSL?
So what we're going to do is we're going to send them an email and we're going to offer them some good consultancy services. That's why it's worth it.
Good. Yeah, you were running NCAT or the
yep.
NETCAT as well. I just want to run another tool similar to that, just another covered channel type of thing. You know about DNS? DNS is a very useful protocol. We can use it for many different purposes. One of them is creating cover channels. We can tunnel IP over DNS. Have you ever done that? I'll just show you how easy that is.
Yeah, this is a Windows tool, of course made by a Swedish guy, by the way. It's called Iodine.
So I'm creating a special DNS server which will act as my tunnel endpoint. So this is actually receiving traffic over UDP 53. If you look at it, it's a DNS server. It receives DNS requests, replies with DNS replies. So it's just another DNS server. The thing with it, if you send it the correct type of request and expect the correct type of reply, and having that password I just typed in, it will act as a tunneling server over DNS requests, DNS replies. So I've just initiated the server part on SRv3 and just go to my client here and initiate the client. Let's see, I'll do another PowerShell here, ipconfig. You see now connection completed, sending data. I have another Ethernet adapter now configured with 10.0.0.0.2. So let's ping. There should be a server 10.0.0.1. So this traffic is now actually going over DNS. Let's do some wiresharking on the other guy. Start.
Why would you ever do this? What's the value? Man in the middle. It's a covered channel. So this is one out of many, many different examples of how you can sneak data out of a network. I mean, this will be picked up by good IPSs and IDSs today. But again, just to show you that there's a variety of ideas you can use in order to get data out from the network to another. Another thing is actually interesting from a more private perspective. Sometimes I travel a lot. So when I'm at the hotel, if I can ping Google and they want to charge me for internet access, if I have ping and they will, and I know that they will do address resolution for me, I know that I have DNS. Then I will VPN or I will do the tunnel back to my mm-hmm. DNS Iodine server back home, and it will route me to the internet. So I have free internet wherever I go, as long as I have DNS access. And I mean, they give it to me, so I'm not breaking any rules.
Yeah.
So
you see now, the client is sending DNS requests. It's a standard DNS query that's been sent. And the only thing that's weird about it is the request, the query itself. So it goes asking for some very weird name, ending with my domain name that I test.asdf decided when I started the server. So it says, hey, do you have this record? And the server says, of course I have this record, and that's the information you will need to understand this record, and that's an IP packet embedded in the request and the response. Yes? Yeah, well, it's possible to tunnel anything. This is IP over DNS.
Yeah, there, we can have a long discussion about covered channels. I mean, you can use normal SSL and go to Microsoft Azure and have your services over there. Nobody will think that's strange. So, I mean, there are other ways to do it as well. This is just a cool example, to be
honest. So I terminated the client and the communication is stopped. So that's a Windows-to-Windows tunneling IP over DNS. And back to you, mister.
You want to go back to me?
Yes, please.
Please? Are you saying please too?
Pretty please.
Pretty please with sugar on top. Okay, so what am I going to do? I don't know yet. I'm waiting to fire up Metasploit. It's probably going to take some time. But this is one of the major players in the tools of... or free hacking tools out there that can do a lot of stuff.
Shall we do some more man in the middle whilst you're...
I'm going to wait that out, but I can do another thing while we're waiting for that one. I did some dumps here, so I can actually take these dumps, and just to show you how easy it is to crack them with a tool called Yarn the Ripper. It's also an old school tool, but it's so damn fast, and it supports so many protocols, it's worth mentioning. But this will represent any password cracker of today. So just by running John, and I pre-cooked this, I put it in a text file. I can run John the Ripper, and I can tell what format I want to use. This is just a file. It's not an IP, actually. It says text. So if I go to John the Ripper here, I can run John. You can see, as with many of these tools, there are so many different syntaxes. And more importantly, it can brute force password hashes of all these different kinds of protocols. It's kind of nice because you can do PKZIP files and all those kinds of files as well, office files and stuff. So maybe if you somehow forget your own password, because you should never do this on other people's files, but again, you can you have a good chance of breaking them using this tool. So just going to run it on the SAM dump I did, and you can see it's really, really fast. It found that support has support and John has winter right away, and it will find more over time. So it's a simple, really fast tool that can just parse through large databases, it can brute force, and it can do different things. And this is a simple thing, free to use. If you have a question, I'd be happy if you could step up to the mic so that everybody can hear you.
Right. So in this example and some of the other ones that you were showing, this assumes that you've got that password in the source file, right? So some example of that password in the source file.
Right and wrong at the same time. You have different ways to go about this crack, if you will. One is the word list. In that case, you're right. You can always do brute force as well and just go character after character. It will be slower, but it will eventually find them if you have an enough large key space and the same amount of characters. So it depends. But again, a long password will take a long time to break. A really long password will be hardly impossible to break within the time space that I have for this attack, before you change the password or whatever. And nowadays, of course, we have these cloud crackers and stuff, so you can actually send your stuff up to the cloud. They can crack it using like supercomputers. Mm. So this is actually brute forcing. I mean, I made the passwords weak because of demo purposes. I don't want to wait 2 hours to show you the result. But it's actually not using a word list. It's just brute forcing.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. So Porsche, Swedish summer one, winter, it's brute forcing.
Yeah, and today there are tools that uses a technology called Rainbow Tables. These are pre-calculated databases with a combination of usernames, passwords, for different type of protocols. So. That will cut down on the time needed to brute force.
You can see this is not a word list. It's just brute forcing. And you can see it's like 81,000 guesses per second. And this is a virtual machine running alongside with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 X amount of virtual machines within my small HP laptop. So that's how fast this is. Also, you have GPU-optimized brute force systems today, so you can actually utilize super many cores simultaneously in order to solve this problem, because it's just a problem to solve, mathematical problem. We have more things to cover and only 20 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get... Yep. There I think is. Metasploit... You cannot run a session on tools without mentioning Metasploit. So I'm going to do a simple Metasploit thing. And this is a framework for attacking. So this is like a box of different attacks. If you haven't heard of it, you probably are not working in security, which is fine, not everybody is. But I think everybody who works in computer security knows about this tool, even though most people haven't used it. So I'm going to show you a quick, simple demo. And just to save some time, remember I did some scanning. I found out that there was an old school Windows 2000 out there. Of course, there are more modern exploits in Metasploit, but this is very stable, so it's good as a sample to show the performance of the tool. So I'm going to show, I can, for example, show exploits. And this whole list of things I'm doing, I'm going to post this on the link as well. So if you want to have inspiration for how you can play with these tools, you're going to have the list. So I can show exploit. I could have written that myself. Anyhow, sometimes it takes longer just to... I think I'm going to have to, if I didn't already, I'm going to have to stop John, because John will consume resources. Yeah. So these are lots of exploits. I don't want you to read this. I want you to understand that this is a box of a lot of different exploits. So going to the next step, I'm going to choose to do a certain exploit. I'm going to set the system to pick this particular exploit. Just going to wait it out. Give me my command line back. There we go. File, paste. So I'm setting it, and then you can do the command set, and you can see what parameters you should provide. You don't need to provide all these parameters, but I need some remote host that I will contact and connect to. So in this case, I'm going to connect to the L host, or sorry, the remote host. His IP address is 11 in the end. I'm going to set some other things as well. I'm going to set the payload. This is what's going to happen whenever this exploit hits this poor computer. I can do show payloads and see what I have to choose from, but I'm going to be a little bit quicker here because I'm realizing that we have a lot of things we want to cover. That's the good thing of running live sessions without slides. You don't know what you're going to miss. We have like 100 of tools. So if there are more notes later than you see, it's just bonus, okay? So I don't think I have to put anything more in there. The reason you normally put a local host is because you have connect back shells, like I did with the Netcat, when you wanted to be able to phone home. So I'm going to set it just so that you think about the term local host. Now, it's all done, so I can go for exploit. I just have to write exploit. And it will actually go remotely and attack that Windows 2000. That's how easy it is. And it will give you feedback whether or not it's successful. And I choose to use something called Meterpreter as the payload. And the Meterpreter is like a small Trojan. So what happened is, this computer is now hacked. That's how easy it was, because it was not patched, or it was an old system. So using the Meterpreter, I can do a lot of different things. I can do, for example, just help to see what kind of commands I have built into this small Trojan. So I can get a shell. I can dump hashes, like hash dump. Again, hashes are so popular. There is a reason for all of these tools dumping hashes. That's how common these vulnerabilities and problems are. That's why there are so many tools. So there's a reason for us stressing it. Other things you can do, this is an interesting one actually. I'm going to do get your ID. I was trying to come up with things that could be of interest. Get your ID. And I am now, since this service that was attacked is running under system, that is kind of nice because I have full control over the system. But the system is a local account. I could never contact, for example, a domain controller using this account. So let's see what I can do if a domain admin is logged on here, for example, or if some priv account is logged on. So I'm going to list processes, and I can see that there are different processes running, and I can see that Explorer, for example, is actually initiated by somebody called administrator in the domain internal. So if I somehow can steal the token of this process, I will become him. And then I can use his creds in order to connect. I'm not stealing hashes, not stealing passwords, I'm stealing tokens. And this derives from a tool called Incognito that is now built into Metasploit to cred them. So, next step, I'm going to steal token. I just want to do this because I don't want to get stuck when I do the wrong thing. So, paste, steal token. It wants the PID, so I'm going to do steal token 480. And now I am internal administrator. And I can prove that because I can do shell. And now I have shell, and I can do like net use --, to the domain controller. We can do, just to prove it, internal.internal --C$, which this will translate into a C$ somewhere. There it is. And command completed successfully. So, because somebody was logged on to this system, and I got on it as system, I can steal that token and connect to other systems. In this case, I did the domain controller directly, but normally you would have to take one or two steps. You're very lucky if the first computer you hack has a domain admin logged on. Or you have a very ignorant admin group of people working in that environment. Either way. So, that's a very select few features of Metasploit, but that is how powerful that tool is. A few clicks and you're actually doing stuff. The thing with Metasploit though is you need to be, I mean there is a UI for it, but still command line. You still have to punch in a lot of code. So we're going to show you another tool later, but we're going to move to Hasan first.
Yeah, and there is a very huge community supporting Metasploit out there. Yes, number three. Let's speak about something else. What if I can have access, physical access to a computer? Can I do anything with it? I just lock computer on some desktop, I just walk to it and have physical access.
Are they leaving because we're making them depressed? Is that it? I don't know.
So.
Just kidding.
Well, what we're going to demonstrate now, okay, this is my laptop. Okay, it's locked right now, so if you can switch to its screen. Just show it up.
You want to switch. I can be your switcher.
Four.
Your switchblade.
There we go. It's logged and requires a password. Okay. So this laptop has a FireWire port. And if you think about FireWire, FireWire is all about direct memory access. So once you have a FireWire device, the reason you get that speed, it is with FireWire, because FireWire can write directly into memory. So if I have another device, three please, this guy here, this can act as a FireWire device. Let's go back and run this tool. So when I'm running this tool is actually emulating a FireWire device. So it's telling my Windows computer, hey, I'm a FireWire device, I would like to transfer some data to you, so please give me that direct memory access now. So once the device has been installed here, if I select one and I go, this is a Windows 8, I figured out it is a Windows 8 machine, it will start reading the memory and looking for that function in memory that actually making the verification that I typed the right password to let me into the desktop. And once it found it, it will change it in memory, so it bypasses the check altogether and let me in without knowing the password. And that was a successful attack. So if we switch back to my computer again. Thank you. Now, what do you think about that? Let's lock it again. There we go.
But, you know, that is kind of interesting because, I mean, people take a lot of heat for not locking the desktop when they leave the office for 5 minutes, right? So, I mean, you should lock your desktop. It makes sense. But using this technology, it will take only a minute in order to patch your authentication so you can get in right away. And that's kind of interesting. However, 1 minute is still kind of slow, isn't it? Not that fast. This thing does it in a few seconds, up to 5 seconds. This is a PCI Express card. It's from a company called Windowscope. It does the same thing. It will just patch the authentication so you can just log in using any password. Goes directly into RAM and patches stuff. Yeah, you want to take a photo of it? You can touch it later if you want to. But
So you connect this to
I'll
any...
See you, man. You're going to get your question.
You connect this to any PC card slot and you just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and hit enter.
And when we first got it, because I called the guys, I saw their advertisement on the internet, and I thought, we have to look at this, and they were nice enough to borrow me two of them, or borrow us two of them. We were thinking maybe this is just PC Express card that will do FireWire emulation. But no, they're doing it differently. They're actually...
It's a RAM extension device.
Yeah, so this is a RAM.
Yes.
And the RAM needs access to the other RAM, basically. So that's how they go about it.
This is a RAM controller.
So this is a smart move. This is not something that people talk much about. So they did a great job. And if you need, for forensics reason or jealousy or whatever it is, I mean, this is a good thing. I'd like to promote it. It's really interesting. And more importantly, even though you're not interested, good for awareness. If you really want to have an experience where you can leave your computer unattended without feeling bad about it, BitLock the computer and turn it off when you leave it unattended. Turn it off. As long as it's on, it's gone. That was...
And you guys should really consider this KBR article about disabling direct memory access if you're into it. So we will put that on the list.
There was a question over here, and I know you had patience, so... the answer is yes. My colleague Björn actually researched exactly how it's functioning, so it has to. The answer is, to me, should be obvious, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong, so I just don't want it. I don't want you to take my word for it. What else could it be? It's writing to RAM. It's registered to RAM. It gives access to RAM.
Yeah.
So it has to be.
This goes directly into the PC card bus.
So it has to be DMA.
So it has direct memory access to memory.
But it's not using the FireWire drivers. It's using its own technology. That makes it interesting.
So it's been identified by the system as a RAM controller.
ESATA.
ESATA should have some type of direct memory access, yes.
It's we should get together probably, and have some fun.
Yes, it's probably comparable to the FireWire things. I know it is for the Mac OS X, for instance. You can use that digital port to do the same thing. It's a mixture about display port, storage port, and so on. So ESATA, I guess, can be done the same way.
Yeah. To me, yes, the whole Metasploit thing, do you have more?
No.
I'm two. You're three.
Well, here we go.
Metasploit, to me, that's a 10. That is one of the most important tools you need to be aware about if you care about security. I mean, there are other tools that are very interesting as well. One is SET, Social Engineering Toolkit, and other things that are focused more on web or on something else. But these big toolkits, it has a lot of features in them. They can do real damage. And you don't need to have very much skills. You need to know how to Google. Or go to YouTube and just download the movies and follow them step by step. So it's really easy to set up your lab and create some understanding about these tools. Use virtual environments. Don't do it at the office, okay? It could be bad for your career. Or very good. You know, some companies hire hackers. I don't know why, but 2 years out of Yale, they're well-paid hackers. So, the last tool I'm going to do is Core Impact. Why? Because it's the commercial version, if you will, of Metasploit frameworks. I think it deserves mentioning because it's one of the greatest tools out there when it comes to click-click hacking. It actually has wizard-based attacks, so if you're not scared yet, this will usually scare people off a little bit. So I think it's worth mentioning. So, last demo before we wrap this up. This 75 minutes went by really fast, I think. So I'm going to create a new workspace, blank one. Name it something. Fun stuff. And I'm going to use a password I cannot say out loud, because then I will get expelled again from this convention center. And I don't want that to happen. So I'm just going to make sure, because I'm going to use that Windows 2000 box and hack here, because it's obviously very convenient. The older the better. It will work against newer things, but my whole environment here is server 2012 Windows 8. So I'm going to restart this just to make sure that it wasn't too affected. I don't know why. Why? It's going to be reliable. I mean, if you're going to fail a demo, it has to be the last demo. So why not risk it?
Just shoot.
It's more fun, right? So Metasploit framework actually has a big toolbox here. These are like exploits, remote exploits. They can run right off shelf. I mean, these are local exploits. They have client-side exploits. They can run on client-side. Targeting clients. I mean, this is a great tool if you really want to mess with the world. Not that I would ever want to do that, but anyhow. Wi-Fi, it's got mobile attacks, it's got everything. This is commercial grade. $25,000 a year if you want the good license. So this is the real stuff. Still cheaper than a good pen test from my company, but anyway. So, this is the fun part. Rapid penetration testing. Network information gathering. Welcome to the Network Information Gathering Wizard. Use Core IPv4, and I'm going to target this network, 192.168.1.9.4.0. And this can take a little bit of time. I'm going to be fast and see if that works. Actually, I haven't tried this on this environment, but it doesn't matter. This is a live session. Whenever it finds computers, so this is what's going to happen. This is where this wizard consists of lots of different small modules. They're going to fire away up here, and the result will be presented down here. So you will see the systems that it will find. And it will enumerate them, so eventually it will know about the ports that is published, what operating system is there, all that stuff. So it will do some good network discovery for you. You don't have to use all those Nmap tools and stuff. You can import Nmap logs and scans and all that stuff too. It's got great import features, so you can interact with other tools. But I'm just going to wait it out a little bit until it finds what I'm looking for. I think it's actually the 111. I don't even remember. Yeah, I think it is. It's still unknown. I'm going to give it a little bit more time.
Meanwhile,
yeah, we're going to promote some things while it's running. Why not?
Our guys back at the office, they thought you guys are worth a special award because being here. So they put together a security challenge, a 12-step security challenge, 12-level security challenge for you guys. Those of you who feel, oh, that's a nice thing, trying to hack some services, just go ahead and connect to this site and take the challenge. This information will be posted in our Facebook group, so you got that information.
Yeah. On the cards. We're going to run over just 1 minute, so don't leave yet. It's going to be like 2 more minutes. I just want to know, you asked a good question, you asked a good question too, right? You did? So I'm going to be, life is not fair, that's like, life is a competition, especially in the US, right? So the first one who actually gets this of you two will own it. I don't care. You too. The ones that ask the question. I don't care. Up to you. I'm going to give you two t-shirts, man. One from TrueSig, one from Microsoft. That's all you need. So, back to this last demo. Hopefully it will work. I have a representation here of the system. So I found the Windows 2000 server. So I'm just going to go to the Network Attack and Penetration Wizard. Welcome to the Network Attack and Penetration Wizard. Who do you want to attack today? I'm going to click this one, I think. I would click more, but I don't have time for more. So okay, and click next. You want to do evil exploits? Yeah, why not? You want to do dangerous exploits? You want to stop launching or something later on? You want the newer ones or the fast ones? You know, whatever. How do you want it to connect? You want to do like encrypted and stuff, random ports, whatever. Mm-hmm. Fragmentation to evade antivirus and IDSs. That's nice, right? Encryption whenever possible. Automatically run extra modules or just fire away. If there is a plus sign on this guy later, it means it's hacked. If it's not, I'm going to show you what it does anyway. But that's how it works. It's running this module right now. You're going to have to wait to see the result, hopefully. If it doesn't work, it's because I did Metasploit and I didn't restart it. That means I'm stupid, but hey, I knew that already. Come on, buddy, you can do it. Come on. Please. Pretty please. I don't like you anymore. There it is. Yeah. So, this is the small agent. It actually found two different vulnerabilities. So we attacked them both. It's kind of funny. So now we can get a screenshot, for example. This is a server, so I don't think there's going to be much there. But you can do other things. Yeah, there is a screenshot, actually. Nice. You actually get a link if you want to see what's on the screen. App can open. Change your screen resolution. I'm not going to do that. So this is a small version of the screen. I don't have a high resolution. I can steal all the files I want to. I can go to the shell and open up a shell and remote control that system. Convenient. I'm going to finish this. Okay. You can get a shell with AV evasion, etc. So this is a very nice tool. You can use a toolbox for anything. Keystroke loggers, all that stuff. So we're going to wrap this up before we stop. Yes, talk a little bit. One thing that I want you to know before you leave. This is our last session at TechEd. We have a lot of these things here. This is a small thing where you can find the link to all the information that we're going to share after the session. We're going to post everything that we covered. We're going to put some notes in there, some extra stuff. It's going to be up to you. It will take you to this Facebook group. The Facebook group will take you to the other thing. But you can also interact with us. If you have questions, if you want anything, whatever you want to, we'll be happy to help you. Free consultancy. You're actually TechEd friends with us now. So if you have questions, as long as you don't have to fly over on our expense, we're going to answer your questions for free. So we're all friends here. Yeah?
Thank you very much.
And a last word. Thank you so much for attending. Please fill out the evals. We'll be really happy to receive your feedback because that is what makes us being brought back next year again. So thanks.
There are a couple of these as well.
Sorry?
Okay, here we go. All right, that's good. Where am I looking?
Hey everybody, welcome back to New Orleans. It's TechEd North America 2013, and it's Channel 9 Live. I have a guest. We're going to continue our international travels, and actually continue the hemisphere that we've been in for the theme of the day appears to be Australian, but we're going to go to New Zealand. Hi Adam Hall, how are you?
Hi.